numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Welcome in, everybody. Friday edition of a numbers game is live from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson, and for Gil one more day, Kelly Bidlin is here at the Shield. And we have a lot to talk about today. Major League Baseball, finally, for most of us as bettors, gets back underway here second half of the season. Post-All-Star break resuming tonight with a full slate of games. We also will talk some college football today. Paul Stone is with us in town to bet some Game of the Year markets. At least I think that is why Paul Stone is in town. We'll talk with him coming up later on today at 11:30 Eastern. And Lou Finocchiaro on a very good UFC card coming up at 11 Eastern as well. Of course, NFL, NBA talk. But we start the show, Kelly, with the Open Championship round number two. And we kind of go back first to yesterday. We were on the air as the first round was winding down. And boy, howdy, if you had a Shane Lowry first-round leader ticket, pour one out. Say an ode to the first-round golf bettor if you had Lowry, who does not win the first round. He was a shot back of Daniel Brown, who comes out of nowhere, was as high as 350-1 to be first-round leader. Brown has since taken a step back. Kelly, another really good round, though, for Shane Lowry, who is at 7-under in the clubhouse as the weather is starting to turn. It's getting bad out there as we go into the afternoon.
Yeah, it looks like I mean, you know, weather forecast, kind of what we thought coming into the week. You mentioned this a couple times yesterday, Ben. It's kind of been what we thought it was going to be. It's just been, in my opinion, a little bit worse as far as affecting the course and the golfers than I expected it to be. But where we're seeing wind at and everything, that's really what the forecast was calling for the whole week. So no huge surprises there. It does look like it's probably only going to get worse here this afternoon. But, yes, if you had a Shane Lowry ticket, God bless you. That is going to be that is one of the worst golf bad beats I've ever seen. I mean, Daniel Brown, like, this guy is, this is beyond like a tin cup nobody, like Ben Wilson. Like, this is, I mean, maybe not that far. Let me give a guy some credit.
Well, what you heard the broadcast yesterday say their first thought when they saw his name on the leaderboard was, the author of Angels and Demons, Da Vinci Code, that guy. And I was like, nice joke, old guys on NBC. Right, like, that, yeah, exactly. Was so vintage, like, trying to sound cool for the young kids watching. Like, let me make a Dan Brown Da Vinci Code joke. But, yeah, that's about all that they could come up with.
He played in the Scottish Open last week. But the only thing I'm trying to figure out now is how did he qualify, or how did he get into the Scottish Open, which I don't really get. He did make the cut there. Before that, he had missed cut or withdrawn in six straight tournaments on the DP World Tour. So that's what you were dealing with yesterday, Daniel Brown. And you know the worst part about it, Ben, is how many people I was tweeting with yesterday who golf coverage went off the air on USA. They didn't switch over to Peacock. Had Shane Lowry first-round leader tickets.
There were like two. I think Lowry was about to go to 18 when they switched to Peacock.
And I think they were tied at that point.
Yeah, and Brown had a couple holes to go on him. So, yes, if you did not go to the Peacock, you were.
Yeah, so you didn't even get to watch your ticket burn up in front of you.
Brown made his way into the field due to final qualifying. So he had to go the hard way. Previously, just one win on the European Tour, which is when he beat Matthew Fitzpatrick's brother, as many know him, as Alex Fitzpatrick, last August. That was his first win on the European Tour. Needless to say, and you know, honestly, though, I didn't see what the second round prop on Brown was today after he gained almost 4.5 strokes putting on the field. Actually, similar numbers from a advanced data standpoint as to what Shane Lowry did, but you had to have assumed the over-under for round two, Kelly, was in the mid-70s on Brown. Honestly, hasn't been bad today. 1 over through 13. He is still solo second right now. It has not been this come up and then this rapid decline. Yeah. But what is really impressive is what Shane Lowry has done. He goes 2 under through his final 5 holes here. The strokes gain data does not come out until these guys are in the clubhouse, and it's a little bit delayed on that. So we don't have SG data yet on Shane Lowry, but he goes to 7-under par. He is a +180 favorite to win the golf tournament. Having said all that, the pre-tournament favorite, Scottie Scheffler, is still in really good shape. Scheffler at 3-under par right now has a par putt from about 8 feet to get into the clubhouse at 3-under par, be solo fourth. And he's a guy you did add, Kelly, overnight.
Has he still not hit that putt yet? Jeez, I feel like we saw that forever ago.
My leaderboard is not updated.
Yeah, mine's saying the same thing. I added Scheffler this morning a couple hours ago. It was a little over 4-1.
You missed the putt.
Missed the putt, cool.
Into the clubhouse, T4 at 2-under par. But a 1-under, that's back-to-back 70s. So not the worst situation to be in, 5 back. He is plus 360, so even, you know, where you added him, Kelly, as we'll talk about, he is at least numbers-wise in better shape as the second favorite right now.
I'm assuming that number's going to get longer, although the books are usually ahead of us when the TV coverage. Anyways, I bet him at, like, 410. I was going to say, just four strokes off, I think he'd still be a good bet at plus 360. You know, but now we're talking five strokes. Shane Lowry doing what he does. I mean, what he's done. I'm not going to take anything away from Shane Lowry. He's played great golf and absolutely has the capability to go win this tournament. We have seen him do it before. It's just you've also had, so what, 39, this is from Justin Ray, 39 of the last 44 Open champions have been in the top 10 after 36 holes. We also had after the first round, nobody had come back to win the thing outside of four strokes back. So all things to keep in mind if you're considering getting involved in Scotty Scheffler like I did.
Basically, one under then is your threshold right now. That's where a host of guys are at as far as the top 10. The guys in the clubhouse at one under: Corey Connors, Jason Day, Patrick Cantlay, who was really good today. And the third favorite right now on the odds board, Xander Schauffele, who is in the clubhouse at one under par. Also, a couple guys at two under in the clubhouse: Billy Horschel, Dean Burmester. Would not have thought, especially Horschel with the way his form has been.
Yeah,
I would not have handicapped him in my top five. But those
Burmester
are your guys.
Was a popular.
Yeah, Burmester's. Yeah, this is a classic links player from South Africa, who has been very good in the past at the Open. But those are your guys in the clubhouse right now, and it's a small list. I mean, at the very least, Kelly, you're getting a guy about the same price as Scheffler went off at pre-tournament, and you basically are eliminating, 88% of the field with that bet?
Yeah, exactly. And I wouldn't have made it. I was expecting a little bit more regression from Shane Lowry. That didn't happen. But I also wouldn't have made it if it looked like the weather was going to calm down more this afternoon. I think it does look like there's going to be a bit of a wave advantage when it's all said and done for this tournament, something we're going to be talking about a little bit next year, because I think this weather's probably only getting worse here this afternoon. And it might not be, a ton, but they're already playing through tough conditions. They already played through tough conditions this morning, and if it gets any tougher, they're in a pretty rough spot. I think a couple guys, just if you were looking to get in, like, live with guys still playing, I would caution because of the weather, but I had bets on Tony Finau. I loved him coming in. He's at even par right now, just getting his round started. He's through two holes. Joaquin Neiman, I know he's got a game that I didn't bet him at all, Ben, but he's got a game that is fit for these conditions with the low ball flight and everything that he's able to take, and he's already two under on his round through three holes. So he's someone I would consider, too, if you're looking for some live betting opportunities.
Sure thing. Yeah, you'd figure, too, this cut. It's projected four over if you look at the website right now, but there are 72 guys, top 70 in ties, that make the cut. It was four over back in 2016. You have to think, though, with the way the weather is turning here for the afternoon, the wave there, Kelly. We have a bunch of guys who have just started who are in that 3-4 over range. Got to think this gets to five at the very least, right?
Yeah, I would think five or six, but going to depend on the conditions here and how tough it is for these guys in the afternoon.
Yeah, some notable guys who are right on that cut line: Robert McIntyre triples one. He's four over. Ludvig Åberg just teed off and parred the first. He's at four. Victor Hovland about to get underway as well shortly, four over as well. And the guy who was the leader, actually, when we came on the air yesterday, Kelly, in that early to late wave that we figured would be kind of second best as far as the optimal start time for Thursday, Friday, Justin Thomas, three under par, was for a long time the round one leader before all those guys late in the afternoon surged ahead of him. JT six over through his first seven holes today. So he's gone from being on the front page of the leaderboard to in danger of just getting to the weekend here. He's three over now for the tournament, T39 for JT.
Love JT, man, but this is a great example of how his season has been thus far, right? He's had some great finishes. He's had some, more missed cuts than we're used to seeing from him. He's kind of been all over the place all year, so I think no surprise to see that.
Ah, JT. Yes, it would look so good for a round. Also, the other couple of guys, you should shout out to Justin Rose. We haven't mentioned his name yet. Four under par for the tournament. He's through eight holes there. But Justin Rose, two under today. He's been super consistent so far. Solo third right now, a shot behind Daniel Brown. Again, Shane Lowry is the leader and your tournament favorite at 7-under par, looking for a second Open Championship after winning at Royal Portrush back in 2019.
In case people are wondering, too, I did get – I asked for it, but I did get multiple.
You got multiple.
Not one, Ben. Multiple tickets of first-round leader on Daniel Brown sent to me from yesterday.
Crazy.
Now, no bet was bigger than $2, but still.
Hey.
But
hey,
still.
Win's a win, man.
A win's a win. Hey,
$2 bet on Daniel Brown is like, you know – almost like a thousand.
That one was $600. That was $300 to one.
I say that's like a $300 bet on Scottie Scheffler, based on where some of those numbers were, or a live bet on Shane Lowry. Some of the other news and notes here, NBA wise, this is not something that will move the needle really, Kelly. But the Russell Westbrook sign and trade is apparently going to be complete here soon, and he is expected to be bought out from his contract. Sign and trade between the Clippers and Utah Jazz. Russ goes to Utah, but they're expected to buy him out, and he is expected, Russell Westbrook, according to ESPN, to sign with the Denver Nuggets. Where he will, will that be, for a team that had so little bench depth at the very least, Kelly, will that be a boon for the Nuggets as they try to get back to supremacy in the Western Conference? I at least thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I think yesterday. A move like, well, I was a little frustrated after I just sat on here yesterday and talked about betting Christian Brown for most improved player.
And then
they get add Russell Westbrook. Is he going to eat up some minutes? We'll see. Frustrated me a little bit. I still stand by the bet because Christian Brown will still be in the starting lineup, but it is something at least to be aware of. I think a move like that yesterday, Ben, and this, we're going to need a couple years of sample size before we can really jump to these conclusions, but some of these teams, this second apron stuff and what they're doing with the salary cap is really affecting some of these teams. And when you see the Nuggets make a move like this, it just reeks of desperation to me that they lost KCP. They need any kind of depth that they can. They're adding Russell Westbrook. I don't think it's really a great fit. But they have such little depth off the bench, like you're talking about. Anybody helps, I guess.
And Chris Dunn goes to the Clippers as part of that sign-and-trade deal. 3-year, $17 million contract with the Clips. We'll continue the NBA talk because Kelly has a win total bet. We'll talk some Defensive Player of the Year as we're just getting started here on the Friday edition of A Numbers Game.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on our football special before the end of July and get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. That saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain access to daily best bets, exclusive betting splits data, proven betting systems and analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and all our special edition betting guides, like our new NFL guide, which is packed with all the detailed team, division, and conference breakdowns you could ever want. Our expert insights and in-depth coverage will keep you informed and help you make smarter bets throughout the season. Do not wait. Sign up before the end of July. Get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. VSIN.com/subscribe. We will talk a lot of NFL today. We'll finish up our AFC divisions, a little AFC South, AFC West to close this hour. Also, we'll go through our kind of a new wave version of our power ratings, which Gil and Kelly do throughout the regular season. We'll go top five, bottom five, which I think Kelly is a very interesting exercise. So we'll do that later. I think we have some weird things that will come from
it. It was a good idea by you, and for anybody that hates Ben on Gil crime, there is more coming later in that segment.
Oh, there is? Nice. Can't
wait. There is. You made your rankings.
I didn't know what Gil's rankings are, so I didn't. I try to be open with this. I'm just saying
there's a team that's special to Gil's heart that you have have ranked pretty low.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Well, that makes sense. That's the reason why it's not postseason power ratings. It's preseason power ratings. We're wrong on this all the time. I think we universally had the Texans like bottom five last year, and they did
great.
We'll get to that in a little bit. As far as the NBA, we're going to talk here. Kelly has a win total bet he has made. We'll also talk some Defensive Player of the Year. But I saw this story yesterday. I know we were talking about this as well, Kelly, where David Purdom from ESPN reporting on all the bets coming in on Bronny James to win Rookie of the Year. So all those people who bet their hard-earned cash on Bronny James to go number one overall in the NBA draft who lost were like, fear not. We're going to make all this money back by just going to the well on Bronny James to win Rookie of the Year here. There was a $1,000 Rookie of the Year bet taken by MGM at 250-1. According to DraftKings, only Zach Edey, who was the the early, that California Summer League, the star there, had his odds cut all the way from 20-1 down to 6-1 in a lot of places. Only Edie has taken more money than James in the Rookie of the Year market, which, like, on the surface I get because it's a hard market this year, a lot of uncertainty, but at the same time, one player of those two who's getting a lot of the action has legitimately a 0.0001% chance of winning this award, and that 1% chance is only because nothing is guaranteed to not happen in this life, Kelly, so we have to put a 1 at the very end of it, and that is Bronny James, who won Rookie of the Year.
That is a great way to describe that. Absolutely. Betting, nothing is guaranteed. Yes, that is.
It's like the, you know, it's basically like the Kevin Malone from The Office thing. If anything has 10,000-1 odds on it, you're obligated to bet it. That's kind of what people are doing with Bronny James, except it's not 10,000-1, even though it should be longer.
Yeah, it should be. Look, Bronny had another nice game last night for the Lakers. The 13 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks. I ended up watching a fair amount of it again. I know a lot of people might be complaining about, you know, no baseball on, nothing's on to bet on. Man, I, between summer league and golf and everything, Ben, I'm busy every day watching this stuff, man. I thought he put out another good performance last night. But yeah, man, reading this David Perdom piece, and this is I had heard this when the market had just gotten open, but man, these Rookie of the Year bets, this is like, this is a worse bet than betting him to go number one overall. Like, I really believe that bet. Like, maybe there was some bizarre world where, like, they felt so desperate, or somebody felt so desperate to get Bronny James to try to lure LeBron that could have happened in the first round. That would have been a remote chance when we talk about percentages. I still think there was a better chance of that happening, though, than him winning Rookie of the Year. This guy, we're talking about a guy who in all likelihood is going to start in the G League, should start in the G League. If you like Bronny James, you're actually rooting for the kid. He should be in the G League and developing for the bulk of this season. He shouldn't be in the NBA much of this season. Now, do I think we're going to see him play in an NBA game this season? Yes, I do. I think that this whole playing with his dad, LeBron, thing has been a narrative and a true story for the past 3-4 years now, however long we've been talking about it at this point. Once the Lakers drafted him, I think it showed that all of that was all true, what we were talking about for years. So, does he play in a game? Yeah, but he's not going to win Rookie of the Year. You're right, it's a wide-open race, but you're talking about there's 20, 30 guys that are going to get regular minutes for NBA teams this season that would be way in front of him. So I just don't – if you're going to go bet Bronny James, pick anything else. I don't care.
Literally, go
up to the roulette wheel and put it all on double green. It's a better bet than Bronny James Rookie of the Year. I just wanted to put that out there.
No, it's well worth talking about. And it's also the point being, just because a specific market is wide open does not equate to you as a bettor just going out and betting the longest shot. Simply because, oh, well, there's uncertainty and it's up in the air. And you will go and bet it. Remember, this is a guy who averaged 5 points a game off the bench for a bad college team last year. Like that,
yep.
Those are just the facts as far as Bronny James.
Yeah, I'm rooting for the kid.
We'd love to see, especially, I mean, you can't even imagine how hard it has to be for the kid, right? You know, given the circumstances, given your dad, all that, you want to see success, but it's not going to happen right away.
Yeah.
Not the way to bet this. However, there is one very interesting award market that has really started to get shaped in, and that's largely because of the debate we had going into the end of last year. Rudy Gobert versus Victor Wembanyama for Defensive Player of the Year. A lot of conjecture, and a lot of Wemby bettors are still sort of saying, "Hey, another block by Wembanyama. Is the NBA going to recognize that?" Well, even though Gobert wins it, going back to the end of last season, now the expectation is this will be the sophomore year where Wembanyama fully takes the mantle for Defensive Player of the Year. I've seen him priced as high as -170, -180. I'm here at DK, Kelly. You're certainly having to pay a tax, and that's a lot to pay on an award market as we're, 3 months out from the season even starting?
Yeah, I was expecting this to open around even money, maybe -110. It wasn't going to surprise me if he was odds on. The first place that opened up was MGM, I believe, and it was -250 is what they opened up with. And now we have some other books that are starting to post this. You're going to get this market round into shape a little bit better. -170, I believe, at DraftKings right now is where he is at for Defensive Player of the Year.
Gobert +750, and then you get Chet Holmgren and Bam at a bio 12-1 apiece.
Look, I've talked about a long time. Gil and I have talked about a long time. We were planning on having Wemby Defensive Player of the Year bets heading into the season. I did bet him MVP when that opened. I think this is very interesting to monitor. It's all about price, and I'm not saying – I'm going to watch where these numbers move, because as you see more and more shops opening this, they're opening them at a little bit longer odds than where we saw MGM first enter the market with. So I think if you are looking to bet Wembanyama Defensive Player of the Year, there's no reason to rush. Wait till more books open up. Let's see how this kind of rounds into shape across all the books over the next couple months before the season starts. I might have a bet before the season on him, Ben, but I didn't get this number. If I knew it was going to be minus 170 was the best I could get, it would have to be a just pause, wait, hope to get something in season at a little bit better number. But it's close. If it gets down to minus 130, minus 140, something like that, I'll probably be grabbing a piece heading into the season because I think there is you rarely see this with NBA awards, but I do think there is a potential reality where he does go from minus 170, and that's the cheapest price you see on him all season long. I think he does have that skill.
The mentality of the sportsbooks as well, especially if you're setting that thing at minus 250 without even taking a bet, is an obvious sign to me. Like, we would rather write a kajillion tickets on Rudy Gobert and have all that exposure than take one big bet on Wembanyama at a fair-ish price. That's kind of how I interpret that.
You know, and at the same time, too, like, you could make some great cases, and you haven't been able to get numbers on these guys. I mean, you want to tell me you're betting Jaren Jackson Jr. 18-1, Giannis at 20-1?
Yeah.
I mean, those are not bad bets, in my opinion. And this is the opposite, right? This might be the only time all year you're going to be able to get something that long on those.
Could be
guys.
Very true as well. Win total market wise, we've had the win totals out. DK's had these posted for about 5 days now. Vegas books have just posted them as well. Kelly, you have been it's been on your list for a while waiting, and you did trigger one bet here.
Yeah, I bet one. I think it's always a little fun to me year to year of how much, like, always around this time is when we get win totals, awards get posted. I felt like last year, Ben, I had a list of probably six bets that I was ready to fire on as soon as stuff opened. They were near numbers that I expected on them, were bets right away for me. Just not the same this year. Win totals and awards, I've made a couple bets, but nothing nothing I'm going crazy over. I was looking at the Spurs over, was going to interested to see what their win total was going to be set at. Was set a couple wins higher than I thought it was going to be, so backed off of that one.
35.5.
Yeah, 35.5. I think actually the way I'm going to approach that is when we get alternate win totals open. We talk about it a lot in the NFL. Alt win totals, just as valuable, if not more, in the NBA. That's one I'll probably still bet, but I'll bet over on the alt high, just banking on them having a ridiculously good season, hopefully. I'll probably make that. The Grizzlies I might get involved with still as well, but where I actually ended up going to is at the bottom of the board here, and it is with the Brooklyn Nets. We talked about this a little bit with Drew Dinsick earlier in the week. There are a couple teams out there, the Nets, the Wizards, possibly the Blazers. Man, they're going to be packing it in early. These teams are very devoid of talent, especially the Brooklyn Nets. That roster is really, really weak. And when you do have someone like Cooper Flagg coming up in the NBA draft next year, this is not this past year.
We're back.
Yeah, there is something actually worth chasing in the NBA draft. And obviously, you got to deal with the lottery system still, but there's going to be some incentive for some of those teams that you're seeing with those low win totals to go low.
It is so funny how the bottom of the NBA standings, win total-wise, it seems like oddsmakers can never price these guys low enough. It's just the reality of tanking in the NBA. We'll start our NFL talk next. Break down the AFC South on the other side.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back here on the Friday edition of A Numbers Game with Kelly Bidlin. I'm Ben Wilson. We'll start our NFL breakdowns, rest of our AFC division previews here in just a second. Kelly and I were just watching random beachgoers at the at Troon, Scotland, just kind of walk through the fescue, apparently, and onto the course. So, I mean,
well,
that's cool.
I mean, what, you got a train track rolling through. I'll tell you the one thing I didn't know or didn't remember, I guess, from 2016 was the airport, like the
There's
literally an airport that's like right behind the golf course. So like late in the round yesterday, they kept showing planes just landing like right.
Awesome.
I think that's 17 or 18 that was right there.
Great stuff. I mean, no, you're not going to get a suntan out there on the beach. It's just no Happy Gilmore sort of situation here. But at least if you go to the beach, you can potentially walk on. I just wanted to bring up some of the stroke gain data that did just come out here, Kelly, for guys that have wrapped up their rounds. Shane Lowry today gains 2.69 strokes on the field on approach. That is number one so far of guys who have finished their second rounds. Lowry was pretty much average with the putter today, which was a good sign for him because he was so good with the putter yesterday. Comes back to earth yet was still 2-under for his round. 7-under, plus 180 tournament favorite. Scotty Scheffler actually lost strokes on approach today, which would definitely surprise you, but he gained a lot of it back with the putter today. This kind of shows you, even with Scheffler in tough conditions, not at his best today, based on what we're used to, he still goes back-to-back 1-under par rounds to be right there in contention, T4 at 2-under par. And he is second on the odds board at about plus 360 right now. So those are some of the strokes gained data coming out. But vintage Scotty, I would say, for one. And then even with the poor approach game by his standards. And then, two, the fact that Shane Lowry, the advanced numbers do look so good for him, has got to be a very good sign if you were betting Lowry here going forward.
Yeah, he is tough. He's going to be tough to figure out going forward for round three, round four, because my initial instinct would say – even though he was about level on putting today, would he gain six strokes or something with a flat stick yesterday?
Almost five yesterday.
Yeah, like you would still expect that to regress a little bit over the weekend, yet the guy's clearly got the wind, the conditions, the course figured out better than anybody right now. So I don't really know that I'll be...
We figured the approach game would be so important based on the conditions. Lowry, between yesterday and today, just doing my calculator here with the decimals, five and a half strokes gained on approach over the first two rounds.
Yeah,
like if you're gaining five and a half more strokes on approach, you're winning the golf tournament if you're Lowry. It's just a question of can you – and he's been a little bit wayward off the tee, but we've seen that off the tee has not really mattered as much. The fescue is definitely playable. Lowry hit some brilliant shots out of the fescue today.
Yeah, I think it was interesting. It was interesting. I meant to text you, too, about this, but it was interesting hearing some of the comments and reading some of the comments that came out from some of the players yesterday, because it was – some of them seem to have been confused by the wind in the direction, while there were others that were saying, no, this is kind of what it's been the past couple of days. I know there was some on the coverage talking about that, how the wind had kind of shifted a little bit where the direction it was coming from compared to the days prior. But, Shane Lowry, I think he had a good comment. When has played this course multiple times, came here for a couple weeks ago for a practice round, said the weather was basically so bad and all over the place while he was here playing a practice round. He was like, I got a feel for every wind direction I could possibly see and what it's going to do to my to the golf ball when I'm playing here.
Yeah, no question. It's for certain guys who haven't figured that out, like it is so stark, the contrast between guys at the top. We watched what happened to Cam Smith yesterday, just looked lost all day, former Open Champion winner, who is in all likelihood going to miss the cut here, barring something crazy happening for him in this late afternoon window. We'll keep you updated as we continue on this second round coverage of the Open Championship. For now, though, Kelly, it is NFL division talk time. We'll do some power ratings here, our top five and bottom five later on in the show, but we've been talking AFC here throughout the week. We'll go to the South, where Kelly is still getting over the Jaguars not winning the division from last year. But
brutal.
We're here to make it all back. And we start at the top with the Houston-Jacksonville comparison, really, more than anything, because Houston goes from worst to first. And now, just as the discussion came with Jacksonville last year, it was how do you handle being in a new role? Texans are the favorite at about plus 105, 9.5 win total. Jags, 8.5 on the win total, plus 275. And we start there and also with the idea of is there a third team? Do the Colts feel live to make a run at this division, also an 8.5 win total at plus 310. At least for me, I rated Houston 1, Jacksonville 2, Indy 3, but the gap is definitely a lot closer and is probably, I would say, slightly closer than maybe these odds would indicate. It's just a matter of both Jacksonville and Indy have glaring weaknesses and holes that you want to see proven before you can really get on board. That's kind of how I view the start of the season with both of those teams.
I agree. I think that Jacksonville, especially after last year, I think Jacksonville, you've seen the problems with your own eyes a little bit more. I think we are kind of at a point with, I'll just speak offensively because defensively they've got some of their own issues. But I think offensively we're kind of hit the point where, okay, Trevor Lawrence has to either, if this is what you're going to get from Trevor Lawrence going forward, I think it's going to be hard for this team to be a true Super Bowl contender at any point. If the guy can take a jump to another level, I think that changes, but it's just something I'm not worth betting on at this point, Ben. And I don't really know where they rank. I do think this division is very interesting this year coming into it. I don't know where – I know I've heard some people betting them to win the division. I know there's some people that think we're talking them finishing third or fourth possibly in this division. I think all of those are realistic. I think what we've seen the past couple of years, Jacksonville should be up there. But, man, I am pretty high on Anthony Richardson. I was very high on him last year coming in. I think from what we saw in the brief glimpses last year, is there's potentially something special in Indianapolis at the quarterback position. I don't think that would lead me to betting any of the team numbers, though, on Indianapolis. If anything, it's probably – I haven't bet it yet, but I'll probably will have a long, you know, a longer shot MVP ticket on Anthony Richardson heading into the year. I just think he has that kind of upside. And if he does – you know, you're looking at that at like 40 to 1, right, Ben? Like, I would rather bet that at 40 to 1 than any long shots, you know, alt over their win totals or win the division or anything like that, because if he's really playing that well, that's where the team's going to be at. But he's going to be in the running for that kind of award.
The interesting dynamic I just noticed when you look at the positional rankings here, you have, honestly, Jacksonville, Indianapolis, Tennessee, all three of them have, you know, Jacksonville's the closest to, you know, right at 50-50 middle of the pack. But I would argue all three of those teams have below average rosters on the whole. But if you're specifically looking at Jacksonville and Indianapolis, what is fascinating about their defenses is that the secondary is by far the biggest weakness. Houston, who is the favorite to win this division, has basically punted on the running back room. The offensive line has been a mess. And yet, despite all that, we saw the success last year because of the ability of C.J. Stroud to air the ball deep down the field. You now have these bad secondaries in a division where you're going to have to slow down Stroud at some point in these divisional games if you want to overcome them to win the division. So as much as I have concerns about the offensive line for Houston, I do imagine that all the injuries, all the shuffling, at a certain point you can't get away with that forever. And they do feel pretty one-dimensional, the Houston Texans on offense. Yet at the same time, you know, where Jacksonville and Indianapolis, their strength lies in the front seven. It's not at all in the secondary. And so that's, I think, where a lot of our concern for having a lot of conviction comes into this, Kelly, where there is certainly a path. If that cannot be figured out by the two teams trying to take over the top spot from Houston, Jacksonville, and Indy, you could see a lot of those interdivision games where all of a sudden it's like, all right, Stroud throwing for 350 and four touchdowns because the secondary is just so poor. And then it becomes, well, even if Anthony Richardson is great, even if Trevor Lawrence, you know, plays to the potential and up to the ability of the contract he was given this offseason, well, what does that really matter if your defense is that bad and the rest of your offense is so weak? And that's what I keep coming back to, and it's why I don't have a bet in this AFC South.
I don't either. I think you just laid that out quite well. I think a couple things to run through with the Texans, right? For everything that happened last year and what we thought about them heading into the year, and the one thing we can all agree on, I think, is C.J. Stroud's awesome. I think right away, Ben, like, I'm not expecting – I know we always try to be cautious with second-year quarterbacks. Are they going to take a step back after having a great rookie season? I don't think that's happening with C.J. Stroud. I think this guy really is that good, is a top-10 quarterback in the league and is going to continue to play like that. So, okay, where did they overachieve last year? They had a great record of one-score games, 7-3. And that's usually something you expect to regress a little bit. But they, like, the injury luck, you talked about some of those injuries. The injury luck they had on the offensive line was the worst in the NFL last year.
Correct.
So some of the, you know, if you can have a little bit healthier year, which is just luck, healthier year, they should have a little bit more consistency on that offensive line. So I think that's a big deal, and I love what they've done. I love what they've done bringing in Danielle Hunter. I think the defense gets stronger. The pass rush is a lot scarier now with him in there for Houston. I like this receiving core. I think this team wins the division, but Jacksonville and Indy scare me enough that it's not worth making a bet on for me, either to the win total or the division. But I think what you laid out is an extremely likely possibility that way in these in-division games, it is Stroud just slinging the ball all over these
other
teams.
Sure thing. Well, the total roster point as well. I mean, Houston, I had 30th out of 32 teams coming into last year, total roster. I have him 10th now this year, and you naturally ask yourself that question. When you're talking about preseason projections, is that too much buying into the hype, right? Are you making too much of an adjustment? But there were a lot of ads, and it is fair to say this is a top 5 wide receiver group now when you bring in a Stephon Diggs, who has so much to prove now, but still clearly has a lot left in the tank to that element. Should also be pointed out, I think, why we're not as high, you know, maybe not as bullish on Houston just to go out and win this division going away. 6 toughest strength of schedule this year. It is not a fourth place schedule anymore for the Houston Texans, and a new role now for them to approach heading into this year. We'll talk some AFC West as well when we come back. We're continuing our AFC NFL previews today here on A Numbers Game.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now at our new look, VSiN.com, which is optimized for mobile, our Lou Finicaro has his best bets. UFC Fight Night coming up this weekend at Yanderoba versus Lemos. A breakdown is Lou is going to join us in about 15 minutes here on A Numbers Game. We also have college football win total. Best bets are out from Steve Mackinnon. Is the college football guide going to be coming out on August 1st? Excited for that. We'll have a full guide reveal show as well. I'll be doing with Adam Burke in a couple weeks' time as well. And full breakdowns on the NBA win totals that are now out from our Zach Cohen. It's all on the website, along with betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides. Back here on Numbers Game with Kelly Bidlin, I'm Ben Wilson. We're finishing up our AFC South talk, then on to the AFC West here. And then we'll do some power ratings into hour number two. And we'll just finish with a brief comment on the Titans, because Titans fans are probably like, whoa, we're in this division too, Kelly.
About us.
What about us? I think it's safe to say the unknowns and the like, just the identity of that team when you go from a smash-mouth defensive mind in Mike Vrabel to now the new wave thinking of a Brian Callahan, first-year head coach, who was going to be one of just three head coaches in the NFL to also call plays. And I have a lot of doubts about the actual success and cohesion of that, because it's been proven, with the exception of the Kyle Shanahans of the world, it's really hard to do that, Kelly. Do both jobs really well when you haven't done it before. So I have doubts, but you also can't argue with the wide receiver room being the strength of the Titans. And Will Levis, there's certainly the physical stature is there to make a leap in your number two. It's just, can that offensive line be any better? Yeah. And what does the defense now look now that Vrabel's gone, who was able to coach up a group that didn't look all that impressive on paper but got so much out of them?
Yeah, I think that's it's well said. I think there are, I have to say, concerns with the head coaching situation after, I mean, Vrabel, a guy who betters rallied around for multiple years of him in Tennessee. I think there's concerns at the head coaching position. I think you have questions on the defensive side of the ball, major questions and concerns. And then you have questions on the offensive side of the ball. I have no idea how to answer, but I think there is a chance that, yeah, Levis, who this big arm quarterback who we thought coming out, he could find some success because he has that type of cannon, maybe puts it all together with adding some of these receivers. I could also, though, see this completely failing. Like you said, offensive line, some concerns. I mean, I think that receiver room looks great if you're playing Madden in 2021. Like, I don't know how great you're feeling about every single one of those guys right now. So, I think by default they're the fourth team in the AFC South for me. But I said it to you off air, I think this is the most intriguing division in the NFL to me right now, because this is – I think all four teams, we could have wildly different seasons from what expectations are.
And it's been a division that has been very, very hard to figure out. I mean, just game to game individually, over the last few years as well. I think that's what makes it really fascinating on top of that. Then we go to the AFC West, which by all these divisions, Kelly, really feels like the widest delta between top and bottom, where Kansas City. We'll get to our power ratings later, but I don't think I'm going to be shocking anybody by saying I have Kansas City powered at number one heading into this year. And Denver is in my bottom five, and that's kind of where it becomes interesting of the pricing now. I mean, Chiefs are the biggest favorite of any division, -230. And that's where the question becomes of where is there any value here, since you likely would say, well, division odds, probably not, unless you think Kansas City really takes a step back. Outside of a running back room that doesn't have much depth, and I definitely have as a bottom half of the unit type of position group, everything else is above average to me. Even with even though the wide receivers, you could kind of make the case either way, I still like what Kansas City has brought in, and at the very least believe they will have a few more options for Patrick Mahomes at quarterback this year. So it's a team that you really can't poke holes in, and no reason for me to believe they will not win yet another division title. It's just a matter of is there any value at all in KC when they have shown that they're not really too concerned about the wins early in the season. They just want to be playing their best football when we get to December and January with such a lofty win total at 11.5.
Well, I think I caught this note, wrote it down when I was going through Cleve TA's NFL preview guide, which is a great read. You should check
great
it out
read,
along with
yes.
the decent one. How about since 2000, Andy Reid teams have gone over their win total 75% of the time?
That's pretty good.
Like, that is insane. 11 seasons with the Chiefs. Teams have gone over their win total 9 times, and the two that didn't, last year in 2021. are the only years that you're talking about. And each of those was just by half a win. So you're talking, I mean, like, we can sit here and say there's no way to bet it, but man, history would tell us otherwise, that they keep even the expectations that Vegas sets for them and oddsmakers set for them, they keep going over those on the win total. So, I mean, look, as division as a whole, I mean, they're the number one team for me. It's not even close. I don't even expect this to be as competitive of a division as even as it was last year when it wasn't very competitive. I did make one Chiefs bet, I guess, related bet. Xavier Worthy, I did bet Offensive Rookie of the Year as soon as those got released. I mean, I bet him at 18-1. I bet him also to lead rookies in receiving yards. I actually think that's probably the better bet at plus 850. Just because Rookie of the Year might, in all likelihood, is going to lean towards a quarterback for the bulk of the season. So I think you could bet him plus 850 to lead rookies in receiving yards. I made both of those bets on Xavier Worthy. And like you're saying, just because we saw what this offense was and Mahomes was able to do last year with, you know, barely any help in the receiving corps. So just adding anybody is going to be big. And Xavier Worthy with some top end speed, I think is there's some bets there to be made around him.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. And it goes back to when Mahomes and the Chiefs were first ascending, and you thought about how bad the defense was and special teams to an extent on that. I look at the position ratings now on Kansas City. I mean, this is a top 12 front seven, top 12 secondary. Special teams is really good. You have one of the most reliable kickers in the game in Harrison Butker. The rest of their unit has been very, very solid. And that's where there's very few holes to poke into. Most people would tell you if there's somebody who could potentially surprise, it is a team getting a lot of hype in that division. It is the L.A. Chargers. And I thought I'd be higher on them, just like most people are, with the assumption that Jim Harbaugh is going to come in. You're number one. There will be this immediate turnaround for a team that has been in so many close games but struggled in the clutch moments over the last couple of years under Brandon Staley. But as I dug deeper into that roster, you kind of realize, like, you always knew Jim Harbaugh would have a lot of work to do, but it's probably more than maybe the perception is, because, like, the front seven, there's been a lot of atrophy there. Secondary is below average. I mean, there's nobody. The pass catcher only New England I have worse than the L.A. Chargers coming into the year.
Yep.
And running back will not give the same sort of help to Justin Herbert as he had in years past. I see that as a bottom 10 unit as well, all leading me to say the gap is a lot wider than I initially thought it would be when I went ahead and did my numbers.
I'm glad you said that, because I feel like the things I keep hearing this offseason, I think the hype is way too high on what this Chargers team is going to be. I'm not saying that. And it's not that I'm an anti-Jim Harbaugh guy. I think he will turn around this team. I think the expectation to do it in year one is completely unrealistic. I mean, everybody who basically scored a touchdown for the Chargers over the past 4 years is off this roster now. Like, that's just, I mean, like, Herbert is great. He's a great quarterback to have there. But you have stripped so many of his high-end weapons away from him that I think this is going to take a little time to put this all back together, both on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball. A defense – for years, we've been talking about this team adding such high-priced superstars that haven't really been able to mesh together and work together perfectly for this squad. I just think it's going to take a year or two for this Chargers team to figure out. Now, I still have them second in the AFC West.
I do, too.
I don't know about you. I still have them second, but that probably tells you more about how I feel about the Raiders and the Broncos.
You know, it's funny. I had, so just doing the power rankings, I have the Chargers as team 20. And I have them second in the division. Like, I have the Raiders 26th, and I already mentioned Broncos are in my bottom five here. So that just speaks to where the rest of this division is at as a whole. The one other thing I did notice with a lot of how these schedules came out, because a lot of times people, you know, are kind of obtuse on this. They only want to look strength of schedule. And granted, on the surface, this is it's a simpler schedule for the Chargers. They have the second easiest in the league as being a last place team, yet 27th in rest edge. And I notice with a lot of these teams who have, you know, it kind of goes both ways. If you have a really tough schedule, in general, you're getting a big break as far as your rest edge. You're getting a lot of extra days compared to your opponent, more games, say off of bye, fewer games on a shorter week, where the opposite is true if you're a team like the Chargers. So sure, you get, you know, technically an easier schedule by win total, but you got a lot of short weeks or teams off of byes facing you. Which to me makes it washes out, and you can't really say it as simply as, oh, well, they've got the second easiest strength to schedule, they'll be fine. To me, it's not as simple as that on LA.
Yeah, I'm usually, I feel like I'm usually the guy that's always ripping on schedule makers no matter the sport. There's always a couple every year, right, where a team's going to have an advantage or a couple teams are going to be at a disadvantage. I just don't think there's much you can do about it. But like what you're talking about right there, Ben, I think is a good example of like these NFL schedule makers, man, they put a lot of hard work into this stuff.
Oh, yeah, they're trying to balance it.
Yeah, balance it out basically as best as they can.
Honestly, only two teams to me really got screwed with, you know, tough schedules and bad rest. That's Denver and that's San Francisco. One of those teams is well equipped to handle that. The other is not. We'll talk in our second hour when we have some time about the bottom two teams in this division, Las Vegas and Denver. As far as the teams who have very good, favorable schedules, both easy schedules and good rest edges, Atlanta, far and away, number one. And then it's Philadelphia, two, and actually Chicago, number three, with the Jets at number four. Even though the Jets have all those primetime games, they actually have, from a pure rest perspective, actually a really good schedule. Those are four teams that are far and away gotten the best draw as far as their schedules this year in the NFL. We'll talk some more NFL in hour number two. On the other side, our pal Lou Finicaro joins the show to break down some UFC Fight Night when we come back.